It's Learning to Listen with Quinn, Naomi, and Charlie.
Yeah, welcome to L2L, Learning to Listen, the podcast. If you want to hear an extra 30 minutes of content, make sure you go to patreon.com/learningtolisten. It's the only place you're going to hear what else we had to say before we got into this episode. But this is where we're talking about music and the way we listen to music. We're trying to engage with the music we listen to. We're all about the lost art of engaged listening. So that's why we're talking about albums and consuming the album as a whole artistic statement, the way artist intended. This is not a biography show. Instead, it is just pure, guttural, visceral reactions to the music we are listening to. So my name is Quinn. I've got my co-hosts with me on the ones and the twos, DJ Charlie Scream.
Charlie Scream.
Hell yeah, that was epic, Charlie. And then, of course, speaking of epic, we've got the future Mrs. Harry Styles, Naomi Carmack. Naomi.
Sometimes can't pee until the other person leaves the bathroom stall on the other side.
See, but that's just the kind of intimate conversation that Harry Styles will just really enjoy, you know?
Yeah, he really
I think you're
it.
So fresh and open and approachable and honest, and I see a real happy future for you guys. Okay, guys, we today are doing a bargain bin episode. So, you know, I like these ones. These are fun. This is loose. We switch up the format a little bit. We walk over to the other side. You know, we've got the Holy Moly Wall on that side. Okay, great. These albums are the ones we're told are important. We got to listen to them. Sure. But what are these ones over here in this bin? This thing over here, they're a hell of a lot cheaper. You know, why not give them a spin, right? What do you got to lose? So today, we are going to be doing Pat Boone's In a Metal Mood. No More Mr. Nice Guy. But before that, patreon.com/learningtolisten. Like I said at the top of the show, 30 extra minutes of content. So there's only one place you can get that, and that's at patreon.com/learningtolisten. Okay, guys. You guys want to talk about No More Mr. Nice Guy?
Let's do it.
All right.
Okay.
In a Metal Mood, No More Mr. Nice Guy is a 1997 album by Pat Boone, in which Boone covers hard rock and heavy metal songs in a jazz big band style. Boone promoted the album by appearing in leather clothing and at that year's American Music Awards wearing a dog collar. I think there's some pictures of him with his arm around Shania Twain too. He succeeded in propelling Metal Mood onto the Billboard record charts, making it Boone's first hit album in 36 years. But it did not please some of his older longtime fans who considered the heavy metal genre in bad taste or worse. The album has since become somewhat popular as a joke gift to metal fans, as often indicated in reviews given to it. Although some serious sites have given it good reviews on its own merits, the album featured guest appearances from well-known rock musicians such as Ronnie James Dio and Ritchie Blackmore. So, you guys, you listened to Pat Boone's In a Metal Mood?
You bet I did.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you this question. Pat Boone, what does that name even mean to you? Are you aware of Pat Boone? Was Pat Boone just something that was like in your grandpa's turntable?
Christian singer, gospel singer. So yeah, I was aware of him.
That was kind of his second life in a way, right? Mm-hmm. At one point in the 50s, he was outselling Elvis. And when young people at the time were polled, although I have a feeling these polls were a little skewed somehow, he came in 2-1, the favorite over Elvis with boys, and 3-1, the favorite with girls.
Hubble, hubble.
So can you imagine this was Elvis's biggest rival at some point?
So would you consider him a crooner? Because that's what, if you would ask me before listening to this, I'm like, what does Pat Boone do? Oh, he's a crooner. Is he a crooner?
I would say in a way he is. I think he leaned in to the crooner.
Right.
Like a title later on. At first he was just a teenage pop singer.
Okay.
In fact, his entire early career was mostly just him covering hit songs.
Right. Okay.
But he got a lot of promotion because he was a very sanitized version of, you know, some of the R&B and pop singers of his day. Like, you know, basically you're at home and you're watching Ozark Jubilee and you're like, now that's a nice young man. He doesn't have to grow his hair all long and greasy and shake his hips like that Elvis to entertain.
Right.
You know, right.
He got, so the safe, I think he got the that, safe demographic.
Yeah. He just fell in with the parents who, you know, sure. push their kids to listen to more Pat Boone and less Elvis Presley and less, you know, Little Richard and whatnot. Right. And then, yes, because he was a big feature in the, I guess, what would you call it? The Christian music world. He had a TV show for years and years and years. Variety show, sang. So he was kind of on the, I guess, the more religious side of kind of crooning. Mm-hmm. And that's what he was known for. And then all of a sudden, sometime in the mid to late 90s, he was like, screw it. No more Mr. Nice Guy. I'm covering all these metal songs.
Now, I'd be curious. When did the Cash series come out? The Johnny Cash series start?
Do you mean the American recordings?
Yeah, the American recordings. That's what I mean.
Much earlier, like early 90s.
Okay, so it's probably something like he saw Johnny Cash having a resurgence with updated, you know, a different kind of sound. Like, you know, obviously the American recordings were nothing, you know, like this with a big band or anything like that, but they were definitely trying, you know, like a re-energizing for the new, for the next round of listeners, right? So I think what happened was Pat Boone just tried to do the same thing, except took a bigger swing, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. He might have been aware of those Rick Rubin, Johnny Cash recordings, maybe. I don't know. I think maybe he just got bored. I think he was in his 60s. He'd been kind of more or less irrelevant, except for in a certain demographic for years and years and years, and he wanted to make a big splash. And he's working when playing with, you know, younger talented musicians all the time. And I think they were just like, hey, you know, it would be a lot of fun. There's actually some pretty good songs. Like the compositions are actually fairly, you know, competent. Why not? Why not? And he probably was just having fun with it, man. It got him a lot of attention for the first time in decades, right? You know, leaned into it, got more publicity than ever in his life. Now, there was some fallout to it because his shows got canceled. A lot of people that hosted him in their ministries were like, you are no longer welcome, Pat Boone. You're making that devil's music.
That's crazy, though, because I could see maybe if he got canceled for those shows, I could see him getting picked up more in, I don't know, like Vegas. Because this whole album just sounds to me like a Vegas residency.
Okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. So the thing is, had you ever listened to this album before?
No, I'd heard of it, but I'd never listened to it.
Yeah, Naomi, you?
No, I had not.
Okay, were you guys aware of it? I remember.
I was aware of it.
I remember him doing like the talk show circuit and stuff at the time. You know, and showing up wearing like a leather vest and like, you know.
I remember him being on the American Music Awards when he came on in a leather vest where I'm sitting there wondering what's going on.
Yeah, and having a lot of fun is what I noticed, right?
Yeah.
But the thing was, is at the time, and maybe it was because I was younger and, you know, I was just like, oh, look at this cheesy old man trying to be cool. And he's like, not like he's missing the mark totally. I don't think he was actually trying to be that relevant. I think he was in on the joke a little bit.
Right.
And he was just having fun with the image because why not? Mm-hmm. Right. But oh, yes. So this is the first time I listened to it. But it's wild to me because I don't know what made it pop up in my brain when I was thinking of stuff we could do. But I've always remembered the image of this album cover. And I've never, ever, ever, ever been curious enough to actually listen to it. And I thought maybe at the time, you know, I thought I would have found it cringy.
Right.
Right. Like that, like, hey, fellow kids, you know, kind of thing. I'm hip and relevant too.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. So I think I was just like, oh, I don't want to listen to this old man humiliate himself. Right. So that's where my brain was at, even being aware of the album back then. But so I'm glad I finally found an excuse to listen to it. So I don't know like what you guys thought, but god damn, I fucking loved it.
I mean, you know me and you know how much I love a good cheesy thing. And this was so much fun. and so cheesy. I was all for it.
It wasn't even that cheesy. Like it was.
Yes, it was.
It was pretty cheesy.
But it was like, I don't know, but it was like a good like cheese, like a good strong like aged good cheddar or something, you know? Like it wasn't Velveeta.
It felt like Richard cheese.
No, no. Okay. Now, I knew we were going to get to that. And
that's an easy comparison to draw for
sure. So that's not just an easy comparison, but here's the thing I kept thinking when I was listening to this. I'm like, what came first? Pat Boone in a metal mood or Richard cheese?
Hmm.
Guess who came first?
Pat.
Mr. Pat fucking Boone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Turns out fucking lounge against the machine there is just copping this guy's style. And I would say not even doing quite as good a job.
No, because that's the thing. That's the thing about Richard cheese stuff. And don't get me wrong. I love some good Richard cheese stuff, but you always want more. Like he'll get halfway through a song, Richard cheese, and then he'll just give up and make, you know, or it'll just fall apart or something. Right. Whereas when you're listening to, or when I'm listening to it anyways, I just want, just give me the full track, you know, mm-hmm. which I really did. I did enjoy about this.
Yeah. I think I liked almost every song on this in some capacity. Now look, his affectation is a little flat. Like as far as crooning goes, he's playing it safe. He's never like really going over the top. He kind of talks through it like this, but
yeah, you know, a lot of the melody lines were destroyed.
Yeah. But I would say the charmingness like of his performance, like there's a charm to it that like kind of won me over. And then I kind of like, you know, because it didn't lean into like Shatner territory.
Sure.
You know, like how Shatner, when he does like,
no, he talks singing. Over it.
Yeah. Rocket Man. You know, this is a guy who's like, he's still leading the band. He's still out front. He, you can see him snapping his fingers and tapping his toes and shaking his head. Like, you know, but here's the thing. This is where this album blows something like Richard Cheese out of the water. The fucking arrangements, the instruments, like the band is awesome. Their the interpretations. Tight. Yeah, their interpretations. Now, like, you know, I thought maybe it would lean into like elevator music territory. And I mean, for sure, it's definitely heavier on the like adult contemporary, but it never loses the big band feel.
Mm-hmm.
And some of their interpretations of the like the metal riffs and things like that. It's not purely metal. It's, you know, there's some I would call more just straight up hard rock or whatever. But they're interesting. They're never boring, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
The only song I don't think worked on this whole thing is Panama. That's the only one that I was like,
loved it. I love Panama.
I didn't hate it, but I was like, as compared to the other tracks, I would say Panama is the one where it's like, without that Eddie Van Halen, you know, guitar playing, it's missing something. But man, as soon as I put on You've Got Another Thing Coming, so very first track, Judas Priest, You've Got Another Thing Coming. And hearing the band like lean into that, I was just like, oh, okay.
This is I'm fun. Listening.
Yeah, I was on board. You know, like I'm just gonna hit the track listing here. You know, because I don't think we need to go over track by any means, right?
No.
But I just wanna like let people know, like what songs were covered on this thing. Okay, so it starts with You've Got Another Thing Coming, the Judas Priest song, then Smoke on the Water, Deep Purple. It's a Long Way to the Top if you want to rock and roll, AC/DC, right? Panama, Van Halen, as I mentioned before. No More Mr. Nice Guy, kind of the title track, right? The Alice Cooper song. Love Hurts, which to me was the one that was slightly out of place.
Yeah.
It was still fun to hear this arrangement, but I'm like, I don't see how this fits in the hard rock metal thing, but right. Okay. Enter Sandman, Metallica. Holy Diver.
I think that one's my favorite.
Yeah,
that's
Paradise City, Guns N' Roses, Wind Cries Mary, Jimi Hendrix, Crazy Train, Osborne, obviously, and then Stairway to Heaven to cap it off. by Led Zeppelin. Okay, so sorry, I just wanted to get those all out of the way. Charlie, you said Holy Diver
was the best
highlight for you. Yeah. And then Naomi, what were you going to say?
Ronnie James Dio actually sings on the album, so I'm assuming that would have been the song.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Very.
Okay, so Naomi, as like, you know, you're quite the vocalist yourself. Now, obviously, Pat Boone's not, you know, like blowing anybody's minds with his vocal prowess, right? Like,
well, just not on this album, no. Like, I mean, it's like you said, he plays it safe.
Yeah, for sure. But man, have you ever like gone down a Dio rabbit hole and just listened to what that man has been able to accomplish with the human voice?
Yeah, he's a legendary vocalist, absolutely.
Yeah, it blows my mind. The fact that Pat Boone would be like, yeah, I'm gonna doobie doop doop doop, like he doesn't do that, but you know what I'm saying? Like his delivery of like,
I'm gonna doobie doop doop all over it.
He gives it a little bit of the Neil Diamond, you know? Like that's where I would say Pat Boone is the impression of a lounge singer that when somebody's doing an impression of a lounge singer that they're doing. Right, without going over the top, you know, maybe they throw in a little Sinatra or something and do a little rubba dubba dubba da, right? Whatever. Mm-hmm. He's not doing any of that here. He's not, you know, he's just delivering, and for the most part, it kind of works. I mean, it would be interesting mm-hmm. to hear somebody with a bigger vocal performance with these arrangements. You know, I would have considered like Meatloaf was kind of like. Yeah, he was more theatrical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In his delivery. You know, and it would be fun to hear like a Meatloaf like do kind of these versions of these songs, or I don't know, or how about a fucking Michael Bublé?
Oh, of course.
Like is Bublé,
that's what I think of.
Yeah, is Bublé kind of the modern equivalent of a Pat Boone?
No. He's the modern equivalent of a Frank Sinatra.
Okay. To me, he's too clean to be Sinatra. Sinatra was a little more rough around the edges, hanging out with gangsters.
Because the mob and shit.
Yeah. And just his personality was a little rougher, right? Like,
yeah.
Bublé okay. just seems like he's just too wide-eyed and he's innocent.
Clean cut, Frankie.
Too clean cut, yeah. He seems like he would be one of the guys who, like, these things get a kick out of you, and he would omit the line about cocaine. And be like, you know, he'd say something about like sugar cane or something like that. You know, I just feel like that would happen in a Bublé concert. They'd be like, ah, you fucking coward.
He makes a nice flavored soda.
That's right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, what do you say about this? Okay, I'm gonna say, Holy Diver, definitely a highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All pretty cool, but like even his the take on When Cries Mary, I mean, that kind of took me by surprise a little bit, you know.
That was pretty cool.
That's a cool one too, because it's not like as obvious a track as Smoke on the Water, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's some things like Stairway to Heaven, Smoke on the Water, No More Mr. Nice Guy, you know, like Enter Sandman. Those are just like, yeah, obviously if you're gonna do this kind of a thing.
Well,
but the Wind Cries Mary is pretty,
yeah, it's not as obvious as the
it's
other
almost movies. A deep cut,
yeah, it kind of is at this point
at least
too.
But he with the Wind Cries Mary, he at least maintains the integrity of the guitar parts and such that were in the original. Like, I mean, I'm finding a lot of these tracks that some of the signature riffs and such are gone, and that's not taking away from the band, because the band's doing amazing justice to these songs and doing them in their own new way. But listening to Enter Sandman without that riff isn't Enter Sandman.
Yeah, I would agree a little bit with that for sure. I would say that was my problem with Panama the most.
I wanted the salsa to that. I was like, oh, right. Go to dance. Get that Latin dance going on.
Yeah, it like that's what I mean though. It works in its own way. I just, as an interpretation of the original, to me, I'm like, it's just missing a little something. So the way you
I like
felt
how he reached down between his legs, and no, he didn't even say that part. He changed the lyric.
He did. He did sanitize a few lyrics.
He didn't say reach down between my legs, just pull the seat back. He just says, I'm going to pull the seat back.
Yeah. He like also that. He like
something else.
The ones
really
I noticed for sure were
PG.
Paradise City. He changes a few lyrics. It's the long way to the top. He changes a few lyrics. Nothing too like egregious though. He just kind of like, you know, Here's the thing. At the time, and I don't know if he expected, because yeah, he like, you know, he really took a real chance on his career. And I don't know if it paid off. I really don't.
Which is unfortunate, because it would have been great if we would have got a whole bunch more of these sort of things. I mean, I guess I don't really know if he did more of these or not.
I don't think so. I don't know if he ever made another full-length album. I think, like, he's still around. He's 87 years old. Mm-hmm. So he was in his 60s at the time. It's crazy to think that. I saw a clip of him talking on like Jay Leno or something, and he was talking about his parents and how they were still around, and he mentioned their ages, and he is their age now that they were when this album came out.
He still put out five more albums after this, but I don't think any of them were the same sort.
Were they back to?
They might have been Christian.
Well, their names were Echoes of Mercy, The Miracle of Christmas, American Glory, Hopeless Romantic, and We Are Family R&B classics. So I think he got back
in his lane.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's too bad.
I could use a couple more of these albums.
I don't know. Here's the thing. Maybe this was cringy at the time. Maybe this wasn't good in a way. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, maybe it just came off as weird and gimmicky. And maybe that's what I was like, yikes, what is this old man doing?
It's just so funny that he goes from 1995, Near My God to Thee, 1997, In a Metal Mood, 1999, Echoes of Mercy. You know, it's like.
Yeah. So I was reading somewhere that, yeah, it had a lot to do with, at the time, he's doing these like mega church tours, touring ministries. He's got a house band that he does, like, does the TV show with, right? And because these musicians, they're young, talented guys who, you know, it's just a gig. It's not necessarily that they're like, hey, I really believe in Pat Boone and his message or whatever. But he seems like a friendly, affable guy. He's getting to know them, and they're throwing him ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, hey, you ever listen to any of this stuff? And he's like, well, you know, it's not really been in my wheelhouse, but I'm an open-minded guy.
Maybe they're just throwing it on while they're on the tour bus, you know?
Yeah. He said that that's what he said. He said that as they were on the road and stuff like that, he would go to record stores and he would ask the clerks and people working at record stores for the recommendations for hard rock and heavy metal albums. And he just bought, apparently he bought like hundreds of CDs and just sat through and, you know, with like, you know, get turned onto things and started making notes and highlighting things until he brought them back to his band leader and was like, all right, let's work on these. And he was like, you know, that's the thing, is he was like, there's such a rich, there's such like a world of music that's like, it might be somewhat inaccessible because of how it sounds, it like through its aggressive nature, but he's like, but the message of the songs, he's like, you know, Crazy Train, you know, isn't just Ozzy like screaming over an electric guitar. It's like the song actually has a message. It has something to say. Mm-hmm. Right. It's about, you know, the state of the world. And he's like, I can relate to that. You can relate to that. He's like, maybe, you know, I can give it my go. And maybe people that wouldn't normally listen to this music will get something from it. I think he was genuine in his pursuit of this. I, you know, maybe part of it was the fact that it was like, this might turn some heads. Why not?
Sure.
But I think I think it was a project that he was really sincerely, like genuinely into. I think he probably had a ton of fun. It sounds like he had fun. It sounds like the band had fun making this.
I mean, I would have had fun making this.
Yeah. If there was any criticism, really, it's that, yeah, okay. So sometimes his affectation on his voice is a little flat. Like, I don't mean necessarily pitchy, but there's definitely sometimes where, yeah, he doesn't push his voice where like the original singer of the song might have gone somewhere in a melody. He'll just kind of stay on a, you know, like,
right.
On a straight ahead path, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's definitely not. He's no Axl Rose. Let's put it that way.
I guess one of the things that's interesting, and I didn't realize until right now, is looking at the personnel or whatever, is the fact that we knew about the Ronnie James Dio, but he got Ritchie Blackmore on there playing some guitar, also some Dweezil Zappa on there. So it's like he got some interesting, you know, like he reached out at some point and was like, "We're going to do some Deep Purple. Maybe we get the guy from Deep Purple," you know.
Okay. Another thing that I appreciated about this album is that some lyrics that I have never really quite understood, all of a sudden I could hear clear as day.
That's true.
Like, you know, actually pretty much all the songs, I think there are words in Crazy Train I've never completely understood. You know, there's definitely words in like Smoke on the Water that I've never understood.
Mm-hmm.
I think I knew the basic premise of the song. I may have like read the lyrics once or twice, but I was like, "Oh yeah, this is a story song, right?"
Dweezil Zappa does the guitar solo on "No More Mr. Night," or sorry, on "Smoke on the Water."
Oh really?
Yep.
Yeah, like, you know, I've heard "Smoke on the Water" so many times, and I know that it's about them, like, you know, going to record an album and a nearby casino or something burning down because some idiot with a flare gun took a shot at it. Right, and that's all in the lyrics, of course, but then hearing Pat Boone deliver it, you're like, oh yeah, this is a real story song.
Just kind of clears it up a little bit more, makes, like, it a little bit easier to focus.
We lost days on our album recording, and we had to get the Rolling Stones mobile van. Don't worry, we made the record. There's a story here.
So Naomi, if you have the inside track of who was on what tracks, what track did Ritchie Blackmore play on? Because I would have assumed
I was just looking at Dweezil's info. I can look up Ritchie Blackmore on here for you.
So I know that Slash was slated to play on this. He was going to do his recreated solo on Paradise City.
Okay.
But apparently some travel delay happened, and then schedules just didn't line up. Like, he couldn't make it to the recording session. And so I believe that's the one that was taken over by Michael Thompson. So I know that one.
It's also interesting that the electric bass player was in Thin Lizzy.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
cool. Blackmore plays on Smoke on the Water as well, along with Dweezil.
Oh, okay. That's what I would have figured.
But it tells me that Dweezil did the solo.
Right.
Interesting.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, you know, honestly, it could have been like, what's his name? There were times where I expected a blazing guitar solo, and that it would be some Stray Cat stuff.
Stray Cats or Brian Setzer.
That's what I was looking for. Some Brian Setzer.
Like the big band arrangements.
Yeah.
It kind of stays in the loungy range, right? But a little bigger over the top. That's the thing. I think the difference between like Richard Cheese and this is Richard Cheese is kind of ironically playing around with the loungy, like, crooner genre.
Right.
Right.
And this is
genuine.
This is genuine. This is unironic for sure.
Yeah. Like,
and I would say that I unironically enjoyed it. That's actually a specific thought I had where I was like, I like this, but I feel like a lot of people who said that they would like this would say that ironically, right? Like, it was like, that would have been the biggest thing I heard about it when it came out was that it was like, everybody was joking about it, you know?
Okay. Here's the question for you guys. So if you had a copy of this album, you could take back in time or just go back in time and force your younger self, 1997, when this album drops, to listen to this album, do you think you would have enjoyed it then?
100%.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I'm torn. I'm torn about how I would have reacted. I really want to know, actually. I wish I could do that, because I'm like, God, would I have been a stuck-up little prick?
Little Charlie Scream would have loved it, for sure, no doubt.
Yeah.
I definitely had a sense of irony, but I remember also at the time too being, because I sometimes think irony was invented in the 90s, you know, because it was an ironic decade where everybody was so like unaffected and like couldn't care, and like everybody was sarcastic about everything. Our movies were ironic.
That's right.
You know, fucking Kevin Smith and Scream and everything just had like just saturated with irony. We just loved it. Blah, 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 blah. We just eat it up. So I don't know if I would have kind of loved that, this and that, like there, you know, the part of me that would like intentionally go to a thrift store and buy like a fucking cheesy like Garfield shirt that said that, like said, you know, like so this is Florida. Right, you know, like,
and you love that shirt.
Yeah, what I think maybe that part of me would have like bought this album and made my friends listen to it, and sure, got like an ironic kick out of it. But but as is with hipsters, you know, and I'll out myself as like a proto,
you're a proto hipster.
Yeah, like not to like lean into the uniform that hipsters became. But like, yeah, the fucking young shithead like going to the thrift store and ironically buying things that I actually kind of secretly like.
Right.
You know, I think maybe that's where I would have fallen on this.
Just using
where I would
the have, irony like, as a cover for something. That
Yeah. To just, you know, because being too not genuine, but what's the word I'm looking for? Just too into anything is not cool, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so I could only be into things like, unless those things were, I don't know. Like, I could care about things that didn't care. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
As there's a word for it that I'm not getting, but like, but that was okay. And anything else, you just had to pretend like, yeah, like, how stupid is this, huh?
I'm gonna make you guys listen to it again. Let's listen to it again.
Yeah.
did you check out the guitar solo with this one? It's so dumb. It's so stupid. Like,
oh my god. Yeah. Can you believe Dio was on this?
Yeah. Fuck. Oh man, what a
sellout. Dio's an old man too, huh?
God bless, he needed a paycheck.
That's not my last fucking, or the thing I hate hearing the most is when people are like, we'll sell out. Like, fuck off.
I'll sell out in a second. Give me that paycheck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are you to judge someone being a sellout or not? You know, fuck off. That's all I
might
to say.
I might judge a few people, but
Naomi's caring too much about this thing that we're not supposed to care about.
Damn it.
That's so lame.
Oh, Naomi, you're not being cool.
That's so not cool. I'll tell you. Okay. So I had this album on this evening while I was eating dinner to give one more listen through before go time. And Kaylee's, she asks me, she's like, is this Alan Thicke? And I was like,
oh,
it kind of sounds like Alan Thicke. I was like, no, it's, and I explained, I was like, no, it's, you know, Pat Boone, and he's doing this thing, and it came out in the 90s. And she's like, I like it better in my head when I'm thinking it's Alan Thicke. So I'm going to keep doing that. I like it more.
Well, yeah, because she's familiar with Alan Thicke, right?
But then I was listening to it, and I was like, I could see that.
Yeah, no. That, as soon as you said that, I was like, I could see thinking that the delivery sounded like it came from Alan Thicke.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to listen to it again, thinking of Alan Thicke singing it.
Well, that's a gift, because you can do that. You can do that all night long.
Now, referring to Alan Thicke reminds me of a previous bargain bin we did for Robin Thicke and his album Paula. Now, this is a bit of a tangent and an aside, but
sorry,
has Robin Thicke been, like, I know he was never canceled per se, but he was kind of like persona non grata for a long time. Is he been uncanceled, or is he like, he's like a, is he a, like a judge on like Masked Singer or something?
Naomi,
I'm asking you, Naomi.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
He is.
Okay. So did he like, does he walk around and Ken Jeong never was like, so that whole Paul album, huh? That was weird. Like, it never comes up.
He wears all these skeevy fucking outfits with chains and shit, just being all skeevy Robin. But like, I don't know if he's uncanceled. He's just, it's a fucking TV show.
I guess he was never technically canceled.
Not a host, but a judge.
Do you figure maybe that it was like people just
kind of name drop a lot,
got over it and forgot about it enough, and enough other big things happened and other people became more vilified that they were just like, yeah, well.
I think so. I think people just forgot about him being skeezy. I think because like Miley Cyrus started doing other things besides bending over in front of him.
Right. Well, what about the model that was in the video for Blurred Lines? Didn't she?
Oh, she came out and said that he was like touchy feely with her or something like that. He was.
I thought
like,
that he had
on to her and stuff.
Okay, so in you know my tabloid understanding of everything that happened, I thought it was like her that he had had an affair with her, been inappropriate.
No,
that was why Paula left him.
No, I don't know how many affairs he had or what he did it precisely, but there was a photo of him. Taking a picture with somebody, might have been a fan, might have, who knows, where there's a picture of them together from the front and a picture behind where he's grabbing this girl's ass.
That's right. Now I kind of remember this from our
why are we talking about episode.
You can look up that on our regular feed.
You can pop back into that.
An earlier episode of Learning to Listen, so go check that out on our regular episode feed. Available on Spotify and many other platforms. Okay, back to Pat Boone. Listen, I don't think Pat Boone's grabbing anybody's ass unprovoked. I don't think this guy ever cheated on his wife. I'll bet even
he's
when
like
he
a good
was,
man.
Exactly. I'll bet that was a thing. Is, you know, a lot of these guys, they're preaching one thing and then they're doing another, right? You know, a lot of these guys are pretty big phonies. A lot of these guys might be out there going, you know, like, you know, projecting this squeaky clean image. You know, maybe sanitized, like good teenagers wait for marriage, you know, that sort of thing. I think Pat Boone is a genuine dude. I could be completely wrong. He could be a monster. I haven't done any research. Somebody send me an article that is like everything that Pat Boone's done wrong.
I didn't see anything controversial in his wiki.
This seems legit.
And you know, Wikipedia is truth.
100%.
Yeah, well, true.
No room for lies.
But yeah, I don't see anything where he's got any like Me Too things or anything bad like that.
Yeah, you know? I think like
seems
other
like a
than,
good guy.
Yeah, other than the couple of clips that I saw, and I only caught a couple, like maybe a couple of minutes here and there. Just this album alone, I feel like it was charming enough that it just won me over. I think I'm just a Pat Boone fan now. I don't think I'll ever buy another record. Or anything. I'm not going out of my way. I even tried. I was
hoping
like,
you were going to only buy Pat Boone records. After
only
this.
Pat Boone records from now on.
I don't think I'm going to buy another record.
The most sanitary version. Of,
yeah.
I only want the most sanitary whitewash version of Tutti Frutti.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't he do like, that's what he did in the 50s was he just did like black artists, like hit songs, not just black artists,
really?
But primarily, well, anybody that had a big, like, you know, like, Blueberry Hill and shit like that, right? And I went back and listened to some of them, and let me tell you, whew, you want to take all the fucking rhythm and soul out of a song? Like he was basically giving it the Doris Day, you know. He was, I don't know, if he ever did How Much Is That Doggy in the Window, but he might as well. That's the kind of fucking like shit he was pumping out.
Wow.
It's not good. Like, wow. You know, when you have the real fucking Little Richard, right? Like,
don't
do you
get
want?
Wish. Don't get the Wish version.
Don't get the Wish version of Little Richard.
Yeah. Don't get the sanitized. But I think, you know, that's something that normally you'd be like cultural appropriation. This guy was stealing black culture and sanitizing. I get the feeling that if you sat down and talked to this guy, he genuinely was probably like, those were great songs. And, you know, there was a lot of people who were scared to listen to that music because they thought it wasn't for them, that it was of a different race. And, you know, and I wanted to make sure that the people that wouldn't listen to that music got to hear just how good these songs were. And you'd be like, nah, all right, I can't hate you.
Okay.
All right. I'll give it a spin. Sure.
I'm a Christian. I was raised by a Christian family on both sides, two pastors for grandparents. I was always constantly told that everything I liked in rock and roll music would send me to hell. So I'm thinking that a guy like this is the one that's going, hey, well, this is pretty good. you know, these we're trying to make it so that like the Christian audience can maybe understand the music a bit more, maybe try to be like a bridge in some way. Not saying that taking someone's songs and making them your own or whitewashing them is a good idea, because it's not, but like, I think maybe he was trying to create a cultural bridge in some way, possibly. That could have been what he was doing, because I know that I don't recall my grandparents ever listening to Pat Boone, which tells me that they didn't like him.
Right.
Right. Maybe because he was covering those artists earlier in the day, and they were, I don't know about your grandparents. I'm not,
that's a guess. Anybody. They're not around anymore. I can't ask them, but I mean, like if I would ask them their opinion on Pat Boone,
I'm not accusing anybody of anything either, but I'm just saying like, maybe there was a segment.
I never heard them listening to Pat Boone that I can recall.
Right.
Maybe they did.
Hard for me to say, because his performances are so nondescript that I could have heard a lot of Pat Boone when I was younger, and it just wouldn't register, you know. My grandparents listened to a lot of AM radio. My grandpa particularly really liked polka, you know, Dutch and German polka especially. They did listen to some big band music, like 40s, early 50s stuff, you know, if they were like put a CD on. They were like, they were people who subscribed to like those Reader Digest, like, you know, they got the 8-tracks, then the tapes, then the CDs years later. They had a decent collection. I remember them putting some of that stuff on. So there was definitely a lot of room for Pat Boone to be there somewhere, but I don't remember Pat Boone. I remember Lawrence Welk. You know,
yep.
But that was mostly from the TV show. I don't remember them ever flipping the channels over to Pat Boone, though. And they had satellite.
They watched like Tommy Hunter and stuff. Mm. I remember Tommy Hunter being on.
Yeah, Tommy Hunter is kind of a good analog for Pat Boone, right? Like,
you know, there wasn't anything I'd ever heard about him in a negative light. So,
yeah,
for all you Americans, might not know who Tommy Hunter is, but
who knows? Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if he got backlash back in the day at all. I'm sure we could look it up. Maybe there's a biography somewhere. But that's an interesting point that I didn't think of. Like, I get why his core, you know, white conservative Christian audience might be like, can you believe he, like, you know, they wouldn't even know half these songs anyway.
Right.
They would just hear the theme of the album and just be upset, right?
In a metal mood. No, thank you.
I mean, he is taking a chance.
You wouldn't even know these were metal tunes. You wouldn't even know they were ever metal tunes.
Oh, if they had heard these and nobody told them, how would they know?
If it's a long way to the top, if you want to rock and roll.
I think only the fact that there's a band called Judas Priest, that's a little sticky in a, like, what do you mean by that? Like, I mean, that's a terminology that comes from Christianity, right? But like, you know, why would somebody want to be accused or associate or be called a Judas Priest, right? Like, that's yeah, I don't know. I think Pat Boone needs a little credit. I think you said it earlier, and you articulated what I was saying better than I was saying it, about that he was genuinely trying to reach out and, you know, like, build a bridge between communities.
Yeah, I think that's what he was doing, because he never abandoned the church or that type of music, right? He never did. He seems like he always embraced a bit of both. He just probably wanted to put some fun back into the tunes, you know, and
yeah, stretch his legs, have some fun. He'd earned it. At this point, he was a retirement age guy who'd had a career going back, you know, to the 50s. Mm-hmm. Like, that's amazing. What was his last hit album? It says that this was his first album, hit album, in 36 years. What is 36 years back from 97? I guess that's got to be 61. Right?
61. So there's a big gap. So 61 is the last time his album hit the charts, and it peaked at 29.
Yeah, from what I understand is he quickly became kind of irrelevant in the mainstream in the early 60s. You know, like as those same kids whose parents were like, "Oh, this Pat Boone seems nice. You can listen to Pat Boone." Got a little older and had a little more agency over their taste and their buying habits. They ditched the Pat Boones and started getting with the Beach Boys and the Rolling Stones and, you know, what have you, right? And maybe going like to some Elvis movies or something. I'm pretty sure Elvis won that battle in the end, by the way. Pretty sure. Although then again, Baboon's still alive, so I guess it depends on how you measure what like what's winning.
How do you win the race? How do you really win?
Is it, yeah, is it the longevity or is it the impact? If it's impact, Elvis. If it's longevity, give it to Baboon. He stuck around long enough to do
off topic.
Do something crazy.
Off topic, I was going to say, I wonder what Elvis's legacy, if it would have changed any, if he was still alive, what he would have done in the last like 30 plus years.
Yeah, okay, years. Good. That's actually a good point. Charlie mentioned Johnny Cash earlier. Like,
would they be like, he's just like a washed up dude? Or, I mean, wasn't he headlining Vegas before everyone does it now? Like, wasn't he doing residencies and stuff before it was a cool thing to do? Hmm.
Yeah, or that's just, yeah, no, totally. He was. I mean, I guess like the Rat Pack and stuff were doing Vegas residencies back in the day. So maybe Elvis was kind of the new young blood of his era. But I know what you mean. But like, yeah, like Charlie brought up, you know, is like, was this maybe him looking at artists like a Johnny Cash, who was kind of going through a reinvention and a renaissance in this period of his career?
Yeah.
Or he'd been kind of irrelevant and for all intents and purposes for a majority of the last two decades. His last hit in like up until basically Hurt, I guess.
Yep.
Unless he had a couple minor covers, hits with the Highwaymen.
Rusty Cage. Well, Hurt. All those covers he did.
Yeah, but even those that charted a bit or got some airplay, I think the first one that you can actually consider a hit was Hurt.
Yeah.
And that was four albums into that American series.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hit when nobody realizes Nine Inch Nails actually wrote the song.
Yeah, and it wasn't even at that point. Hurt, the Nine Inch Nails version of Hurt wasn't even 10 years old, and people had already forgot that it existed.
I like the Nine Inch Nails version more. I do.
I don't think it's. I don't know. I don't think it's an either or. I think they're.
Yeah, I think they're both different enough that it just depends on what you need it for.
I think the novelty.
Yeah, what you need it for.
I think the novelty of some of Johnny Cash's covers kind of sometimes outshines the depth of those covers, like why they were chosen, and they were chosen carefully with Rick Rubin, and you know, they were also a lot of the musicians, like the house, the or studio musicians, were all members of the Heartbreakers. Tom Petty had a lot to do, and the Heartbreakers had a lot to do with the second album out of that series, which I actually think is one of the strongest ones. It's a point in Johnny Cash's career where you can tell he's been a little bit reinvigorated by how well received the first American recordings was. And the first American recordings is almost primarily just him and a guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So second album, they're like, let's do it. Let's bring a band in. They brought in the Heartbreakers. That one's a solid one. Mm-hmm. That's the one that has Rusty Cage on it.
Yes. Which is a great track.
Yeah. Which is a great track. But anyway, I digress. We were talking about Elvis a little bit too. It's like, yeah, right. Like, would have Elvis stayed relevant or not? Would do you think he would have had the later, the career? Would he still be around you maybe like having the later career renaissance, or would he be making potentially cringeworthy No More Mr. Nice Guy albums?
I mean, there's that. Yeah. I mean, or there's even the other lane in that. Would he be at this point canceled for some reason? You know, like,
oh, I don't know why you had to go there. Yes, of course, because it turns out everybody, all our idols,
they're all terrible people.
Remember when they used to say that? Never meet your idols.
Never meet your idols in this current year.
Because you might give them COVID?
Yeah, you might give them COVID. Or they might give you COVID.
Some of them are pretty old. You don't want them to get sick with COVID.
True. Anyway, I'm just saying, though, that whole tangent and everything is really just a long-winded way to say, like, you got to give it to Baboon. You know what? He, in a moment later in his career, he decided, why not take a shot, swing for the fence. And even though I don't understand why it seems to be so poorly rated, although I only saw like All Music is the only rating that I've actually seen, which is 2 out of 5 stars. I think that's unfair.
Ah, it is unfair.
Yeah.
I would have rated it higher for sure.
I wouldn't have said five stars,
but higher anyways.
Yeah, I don't think this was just a flash in the pan, like stupid, like, what's the word? like it wasn't a flighty project that he just threw out. You can tell some work was put into it just by the quality of the musicianship.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly the thing that really won me over about this album.
Novelty. That's the word I was. It's not a novelty album.
Right.
To me.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you just nailed it. I think on the surface, this looks like a gimmick, like a novelty record, like that it's almost like it's a joke.
I don't think it is. When we were going to listen to it, I thought that's exactly what it would be, and I was impressed. No,
I think a lot of hard work went into this album, and I think it shows. I think it's, yeah, I think it's. So, I don't, yeah, you guys, does it deserve to be in the bargain bin?
No.
I mean, I think it makes sense there. Even though I like it as much as I do.
Yeah.
I still I'll tell you what. Like that for me.
In my metaphorical record shop that I run, I'm putting this on the holy moly wall. I'm putting it behind the counter. You know, the good ones, the ones that the MoFi pressings.
Oh, well, I thought you'd be like the employee recommendations.
Oh yeah. No, I'm like, okay. If anybody's reference, modern reference for a record shop is just the movie High Fidelity. All right. If I'm Jack Black, I'm the guy who's like telling somebody that, like, you know, like, are you out of your fucking mind? That fucking record is genius. Like, you know, and they're going, okay. And I'm like abusing a customer, you know, by like forcing them, you buy this and you go home and you put this on your turntable right now. And you come back and you thank me later.
You don't own it yet? That is obscene.
Yeah.
Exactly. Don't worry. Let the healing. So, you know, a lot of the time when we're doing the GOAT series, the Rolling Stone 100 Greatest Albums series that we're doing, you read the review of the album, what they say about it. Do you want to hear the 2-star All Music review?
Absolutely. Yes. I do. Yes, please. Yeah,
I found it. It says, before finding God in gospel, Pat Boone first made a living in the 50s, gumming his way through early rock and roll and rhythm and blues covers, turning out risible white bread pap for the masses. Boone would now have us believe, 40 years on, that he has lost religion to suddenly embrace the mighty masters of metal. There's no logical reason for human beings to deliberately expose themselves to Mr. Boone's new wash-off tattoo, Harley fixation, and deadpan milquetoast delivery as he, his cookie-cutter female background chorus, and underachieving big band Samba their way to Deep Purple's Smoke on the Water and jive to Guns N' Roses' Paradise City, and swing through the most ludicrous read imaginable of Metallica's Enter Sandman. Other abominations include Alice Cooper's No More Mr. Nice Guy, Ozzy's Crazy Train, and that ultimate nightclub closer, wait for it, Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven.
I take great offense at saying that was an underachieving band.
Yeah, you know what? Whoever wrote that, they don't know shit.
He's angry. Angry.
Yeah, you know, I don't think they got it. I think they just dismissed this before they listened to it. They were me. Not even me. Like I
critics
said, I think I would have gotten to this. I would have let myself listen to this ironically. Here's the thing. Even that line about No More Mr. Nice Guy, I'm going to tell you right now that earlier today, as I was getting ready for my day, I was listening to this record and I was like, I'm going to go take a shower. And I had this on playing real loud while I'm taking a shower. And man, if I did not catch myself singing No More Mr. Nice Guy, No More
Mr. Nice Guy. Give yourself like finger guns that, in the mirror.
No more
with that swing to nice it.
Guy. Hey, they say, swing. He's sick. He's upsie. I was singing along. I was like, I think I like this version better. At least this is fun. This is fun sing along. I don't know if I'd throw Alice Cooper on right now and be like, yeah, I'm going to get down with some Alice Cooper and sing at the top of my lungs in the shower. No, but fucking Mr. Pat Boone brought it out of me. So kudos to you. Kudos to you. I was going to ask you guys if it's going in your collection, your metaphorical collection.
You know,
I don't tally these ones. So, you know, I won't hold it against you one way or the other.
I feel like this would be one that I would put in my collection and I would listen to it a couple of times, and then I'd forget about it for a very long time.
I would have it around for sure.
I'd have it around, but then I probably wouldn't listen to
it.
You'd
probably skip it when it came on. You'd probably skip it because you'd
put a track or two on from it just to see how people got. I'd put Holy Diver on for sure. Does people see go, is this Holy Diver? Who's doing this? I'll tell you what, though. So, you know, I've told you guys my system of like, if I think I'm like, I don't want this to taint my algorithm, I'll use a different music streaming service than my main music streaming service, mm-hmm. which shall go unnamed just in case Neil Young's listening. But I let this go in my algorithm, guys.
You know what? That's funny. The first time I listened to it, I listened to it on YouTube so that it wouldn't mess up my algorithm. But the second and third time I listened to it, it was on Spotify.
Nice.
So I'm like, I want this to show up in my end of the year. You listen to this a lot list.
Sorry. I'm not listening to it on Amazon. Definitely not listening to it on Tidal. God, have you guys noticed how many Tidal ads all of a sudden there are?
Oh, yeah. They're paying big for it. They want to get it out there. They're looking. Yeah. They know certain people are looking for an alternative and they want to be that alternative.
Are they still charging up the ass for it?
Oh, probably. Sorry, guys.
I just remember it being so much more expensive than the other services. But mm-hmm. then if they're going to pay the artists, I get it. But also, you know, I used to spend like $50 a month easily just buying CDs.
Mm.
Right? So what am I complaining about?
Try vinyl.
That's right. Yeah.
$50 buying one album.
Get a record collection.
That's why I haven't joined that club yet.
But I'll tell you what. When I do want to get it in hi-fi, I go and spend $50, you know what I'm saying? So, so take that title. All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Did Naomi actually say, is it going in your collection?
Oh, whoa.
No.
No. What a surprise.
Because I think I would just, come on, I'd probably skip songs, you know?
It's fair.
Yeah. So, I mean, I might say, that'd be fun to listen to again and then never listen to it again.
Right.
So, no.
Okay.
Sorry, Pat.
Every once in a while, I'm throwing this on, and this is coming up at a party or something. This is coming up like hanging out. Like, have you ever heard this? It's coming up for sure. Okay. Thanks so much for hanging out with us guys today. That was Pat Boone's In a Metal Mood. No More, Mr. Nice Guy. If you want to know what else we're doing, just follow us on all the social medias. We got all those things in one place, so it's just, you know, easy. Go there and then pick your favorites and just click, you know, follow, subscribe, like, all that stuff. It's called the website. Charlie, what is that website?
Oh, that website is l2lpodcast.com.
Hey, all right. And then because this is an audio format, we figured that we'd like to hear more from you, your beautiful voices. In our ears, you know, it's not all music. Sometimes we want to know what you have to say. And the way you can do that is to just drop us a line. Naomi, what is that number?
Leave us a voicemail at 780-851-8785. We might play it here on the show.
Yeah, you never know. Just let us know about anything we're talking about. It could be this episode, could be episodes in the past, episodes in the future. Whatever. You got a hot take? Let us know. Okay. And then, of course, our hosts have things, projects, dreams, desires. What do you guys got going on? Charlie, what do you got to plug?
Well, folks, if you like this show and you want to help support it, why not get yourself a t-shirt or some merch? Go on down to oldmandesign.com and get some podcast merch. There's all kinds of stuff on there. Maybe this podcast, maybe another podcast. Maybe you like country music. Maybe you like plague doctors. Go on down to oldmandesign.com. Get some shirts. We'll get you sorted.
All right. And then Naomi, what do you got going on in your world?
My podcast called Dope Nostalgia. We have like stuff and things happening. Like I have an interview coming up with a gentleman named Curtis Stigers, who had a big hit in the 90s, but he also is the singer of the theme song to Sons of Anarchy.
So
he's had a lot of stuff in the past and now, so he'll be on the show coming up soon.
Interesting. Cool. All right. Well, yeah, if you guys are as hooked on the 90s as Naomi is, then you got to check out her podcast, Dope Nostalgia. All right. And of course, patreon.com/learningtolisten. I think we did like a whole 30 minutes on the top of this show. And the only way you can hear it is by going to patreon.com/learningtolisten. Hey, listen, if you like when we go off on tangents, when we get a little loose.
Oh, you're going to love this.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's just us shooting the shit for 30 minutes. And you never know what we're going to talk about. Of course, there's also all kinds of other bonus stuff on there. So go check it out. patreon.com/learningtolisten. All right. And thank you once again. Thank you for everybody for hanging out with us, checking the stuff out. You know, we appreciate you. We really do. I guess I should tell people what we're doing next week.
What are we doing next week?
Well, I think we're going to round out our, not the whole series, but we've hit another milestone in our Rolling Stones greatest albums of all time. And we're going to move on to number 80. It's going to be the Sex Pistols. Never mind the Bollocks. Here's the Sex Pistols.
Or wait,
that's going to be interesting. That's switching it up. That's switching it up. From Beyonce was the last one.
From Beyonce,
I had a good run. I had a good run. Now it's back to
what? What if though? What if you listen to this and your mind is blown? Huh? Have you ever thought of that? Okay. What if this is your one true love? You know, what if this is your Frog Prince?
This album is my Frog Prince.
This album is your Frog Prince. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to marry it one day.
All right. Well, that's a whole episode right there. I guess I got to, you know, wrap things up. So what was I going to say about this one? I didn't pre-think of one, you know. I thought, I could come up with something off the cuff here. And I just don't know if I got one. Maybe, I don't know. Guys, give me, like, lead me somewhere.
Something about a dog collar, man. I don't know.
Okay. All right. While shopping for stage clothes for the promotional leg of his tour, he walked into PetSmart and said, wrap it up.
Smart. Oh, come on.
What? Wayne Brady gets to fucking make corny jokes all the time and people are like, he's an improv genius.
You got something better, Naomi?
Yeah, let me hear it.
Where else would you buy some hot leather? That's like not dog collar stuff.
Is that a question or is that the line? Because you didn't say wrap it up. Yeah, I was talking
about the dog collar.
No, I thought you were talking about Pat Boone. Did he wear a dog collar?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I thought maybe he'd wear a nice leather vest.
But this one maybe is just for the Patreons. But I was looking at the album cover earlier and I was like, this is like your dad got a divorce.
Right? This is a midlife crisis.
Not only is he in a midlife crisis, he's about to explain to you that he's now into the lifestyle.
Oh, shit. Yeah. He's got the maybe sex swing and everything.
Maybe make this the end of the episode, Charlie. And you're like, oh, dad, if you're going to be out there banging divorcees, you better. Wrap it up.
The music was fun, and then it got really dark for a while, a little bit anti-establishment.
But the next thing you knew, it was totally fun again.
So many artists came and went and left us wondering, what are they doing now? This podcast isn't about the heavy hitters who are still making millions. It's about everyone else, the ones whose careers didn't really leave that decade and kind of just still live in our memory.
So you mean Vanilla Ice had another song?
We all know what happened to Marky Mark. But what about the Funky Bunch? Who were the KLF? And why did Tammy Wynette record a song with an electro dance band that topped the charts? Two genres that specifically defined the 90s. What were freestyle and New Jack Swing all about? Did you know that Blossom star Joey Lawrence had a huge pop hit? Or that Alanis Morissette had a really hot pop career in Canada before Jagged Little Pill? All you
special guest will also be joining me to discuss the great era of glitter, grunge, thin eyebrows, hammer pants, and total ridiculousness. We're even setting up some interviews with some of the musicians that define the times.
Okay, so if you're older than 30, you might be sitting here going, man, I totally remember that song, but I have no idea who does that. Well, then you better listen and find out.
I'm Naomi Carmack, host of the Ultimate 90s podcast, Dope Nostalgia. You're going to be busting the move again, coming in early 2020. You want to follow us so that you know when we go live? Check out our Twitter at NostalgiaDope, or you can find us on Instagram at Dope_Nostalgia. If you've got a question or you just want to be on the show, email us at DopeNostalgiaPodcast@gmail.com.